You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Joan Sutherland died this past weekend at the age of 83.
You have to sing with your own voice and make your own voice give the impression of the person's feelings that you are interpreting. I realized that I was trying to sing like Gullah Geechee, and I never had the voice that sounded like her. So I stopped doing it, and it was harder to stop than start, in a way. And really sort of found my own way with the voice I had.
That was Joan Sutherland on Minnesota Public Radio in 1998. Luciano Pavarotti called her the voice of the century. English opera goers called her the incomparable. And after an amazing performance of Alcina in 1960, the audience called her La Stupenda. It was a title that fit Joan Sutherland, and her voice that amazed and astounded. Never before or again would we hear such seemingly effortless agility, astounding intonation, unbelievable trills and staccatos that sound like she's picking them out with a needle. They're that accurate, like sparkling glints of light. She had a 3-octave range. Her highest note was the F sharp above high C. Joan Sutherland was born in Sydney, Australia. Her mother was a trained singer. Her father was tone deaf. She was 25 years old when she won Australia's most significant singing competition and moved to London to try her fortunes. She was employed as a utility soprano with the Royal Opera House, and in this case, utility means exactly what it does in sports, which is you're able to substitute for a number of different roles in a production. In November of 1952, she sang Clotilde in a production of Norma that starred Maria Callas. It wasn't a historic performance, except that Sutherland, in many ways, was the heir apparent to Callas. Callas was a soprano whose voice would be on the decline in a few years. Sutherland's voice was rising and would soon reach the rafters of every major concert hall in the world. Take a listen. You can hear the difference in their voices. Callas was the prima donna of the 1950s. Her voice was strangely compelling, described even by her mentor as a big, ugly voice, but with emotional heft that could not be ignored. But listen to Joan Sutherland. Beautiful, crystalline, translucent almost, and utterly moving. Sutherland met a young pianist named Richard Bonning and married him in 1954. The pair was much greater than the sum of its parts. Because of the great size of her voice, Sutherland had been training as a Wagnerian soprano. Here's Joan talking on Charlie Rose in 1998 about how her husband changed that.
I thought I was going to sing the more dramatic roles, the Wagner roles, but at the time I was doing that, I was actually really putting a lid on the upper part of the voice, and the upper range was there, and he found that it was there, and he just opened it all up for me and said, you know, you really should be singing the bel canto repertoire, not the heavier repertoire at all. And we worked on it, and after 7 years at Covent Garden, they gave me Lucia to perform, which turned me into an international star.
And thus the prima donna found her groove. Sutherland brought about a renaissance of the bel canto operas. In Italian, that means beautiful singing. The music of Bellini and Donizetti, audiences couldn't get enough of her coloratura. It was her performance in 1959 of the mad scene from the tragic opera Lucia di Lammermoor that made her a star. As a student at the University of Michigan, I spent hours listening to Joan Sutherland's recordings, knowing that no matter how good I got, I would never be that good. People throw around the phrase showstopper too much, I think, but it's no exaggeration to say that Sutherland's performance stopped the show, because that's quite literally what she did in 1958. She was singing Let the Bright Seraphim from Handel's opera Samson. The aria is a bear. You can study it in college, but few people can actually pull it off on stage.
Oh,
When Joan Sutherland finished it, the crowd leapt to its feet. They stood and applauded for 10 minutes, bringing the opera to a complete halt. It was one of the most amazing ovations the Royal Opera House had ever seen or ever would see. And on New Year's Eve 1978, the soprano became Dame Joan Sutherland, a title that sounded much more formal and pretentious than the real woman ever was. 217 performances at the Met, numerous awards, including becoming the very first female Australian of the Year.
I didn't have very much ego at all. I just wanted to sing at Covent Garden, and when I got to Covent Garden, I was perfectly happy. The career took over. I never really thought I had the voice that other people did.
Joan Sutherland never sang with the emotional complexity of Maria Callas. She didn't have the pert prettiness of Beverly Sills or the grandiose presence of Leontine Price. And she was criticized throughout her life for what can only be described as mushy diction. But Sutherland's voice was utterly unique. Listening to her sing was like watching Michael Jordan play basketball or Isaac Stern play violin, a virtuoso at the height of her powers. And when it was time to retire, she did so with grace and very little fuss. "The machinery wears down," she said, "just like your refrigerator." Dame Joan Sutherland has joined the choir triumphant, where I'm sure she's stopping the show even now.
Joan Sutherland, that's one formidable angel.
Yeah, indeed. I don't think she needs the harp.
I grew up in a house of parent opera fanatics, and Sutherland was always on Tibaldi and Bierling, my mother's favorite tenor.
Well, that's quite the international trio there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lovely thing to grow up with. Did you like it, or was you a kid?
Oh, I loved it.
Why the heck are these people singing like this?
No, and I always thought that that Texaco had something to do with opera.
Because they sponsored all the Met broadcasts. Yes.
I would expect them to sing at the Texaco station.
And you connected them with oil and opera.
Right. That's beautiful stuff.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.